This is Colourful Radio.
We've got Nick Hardwick in the studio, who's the chairman of the IPCC, the Independent Police Complaints Commission. Now, they came into being a few years ago because the old Complaints Authority was considered to be discredited, too close to the police, and people said it was the police investigating the police. They wanted something much more independent, much more robust. The question is whether or not they've done the job. Now, today they're in the news because they've released figures showing that complaints against the police have risen by 8%. There are lots of other things as well to talk to Nick Hardwick about. Nick, good morning.
Good morning.
How's it been for you lately? Because I know that it's been a bit hot in the last few months, especially in April during the G20. What's it been like?
It's always hot for us. I think that goes with the territory. The reality is we deal with very controversial cases and issues on which people have got very strong opinions. And, you know, the cases we pick out to handle are the ones that are most controversial.
Yeah.
And those, so it'll be hot. You know, you're not going to please everybody.
And in terms of today, what kind of picture are you painting, or should I say your stats painting, about the police and their relationship with the community? Because by and large, we're told we have the best police, not force anymore, service in the world. What do the figures tell us?
Well, the figures tell you what people are fed up enough about to make a complaint. And it's not actually, most of it is not the big headline-catching things. In the end, it boils down to rude and late, that people don't feel the police are treating them with proper respect and courtesy. And if they're the victims of a crime or antisocial behaviour, things like that, they don't feel they get the support and protection they need when they turn to the police in their hour of need. Right? And the critical thing, you know, if the police want to have the confidence of the community, well, they need to listen to what people are saying to them and start by addressing those issues.
Nick, can I ask you a question? Why do I, or should I believe that you're going to get to the bottom of a complaint? Well, I mean, who are you? Who are the people on the you know, you're the I, whatever they're called?
The IPCC. IPCC.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't, not just because I say so, you know, you should... we do one thing that our predecessor didn't do. Right?
Yeah, but I mean, are you lawyers?
Let's talk about me, right? Yeah. I used to, before I did this, by law, neither me nor any of the commissioners are allowed to work for the police.
Right.
So before I did this job, I used to run the Refugee Council around the corner from here. And before I did that, I ran a charity called Centrepoint that worked with homeless people. Mm-hmm. So my background is in the voluntary sector. Some colleagues have been community activists, like Mike Franklin, who's a community activist around Brixton. Others come from the private sector. Some are lawyers. So it's a big mix of people. And it's the mix in terms of the commissioners who are responsible for making decisions on the cases. And I think it's the kind of mix that work. And then we have about 400 people who work for us who come from a variety of different backgrounds. And let's get it out of the way. Some of our proportion of our investigators, about a third, are ex-police officers.
So why wouldn't the ex-police officers? Isn't it obvious the ex-police officer is going to be just going to be close to the people they're investigating? They're all going to know them,
aren't
they?
Well, I think that what people... No, they won't. So we wouldn't do that. And let's be clear. First of all, it's the commissioners who make the decisions on cases, right? And what people say to us they want, they say, look, being independent isn't enough. What you've also got to be is competent, right? You could be as independent as you like, right? But if you didn't get to the bottom of an issue, you wouldn't be doing anybody any good. So what we try, and a lot of what we deal with, is deaths. And the people who've got experience of investigating homicides are the police. So we have a mixture of people who work for us, and you have to look at that mixture and say, okay, is that going to give you the independence and the competence that you want? And you can, and how do you know, right? Then you can look at the results of our investigations on our websites, and you can make your own mind up, right? Don't believe what you read in the papers. Look at the facts, look at the investigations, look at the evidence that's published, and make your own mind up, right? And I think, you know, compare whatever you think about, say, let's take the most notorious case, say the Stockwell shooting, the Menezes.
Yes, John Charles Menezes.
Okay, take that. Okay, whatever you think about that, one of the differences between that and, say, other notorious cases, like Stephen Lawrence, Blair Peach, the Hillsborough disaster, everything about the Menezes case is published, mm-hmm. right? All the evidence. All the transcripts of what people said at the inquest.
All the CCTV.
Reasons, yeah, the CCTV is published. You can find that on the website. All the issues around that exist, right? So you can read that, right? And you can make your own mind up. So you should do, how should you make your mind up about us in the same way we make our minds up about things? On facts and evidence.
There have been a couple of cases, though. You mentioned Jean-Charles Menezes, and then we've also got Ian Tomlinson and the G20 on the 1st of April. He's the man, the newspaper seller, who was pushed to the ground by police and then died sometime afterwards. We don't know whether or not he was directly related to what the police did or not. But there was a sense that you guys may be slightly behind the curve, that you didn't have access to everything you needed, and that the police were kind of bullying you, and that you guys were not robust enough. And I remember you at the time, and actually thinking to myself, is Nick Hardwick going to survive this? Because they don't look as though they are in charge of this particular investigation. The police are pushing them back and saying, look, leave it to us. We're the professionals.
One is, here I am. I survived it.
So you did survive.
But look, the point is, I mean, you kind of course, sometimes the police don't want us to be involved.
Yeah.
Sometimes, notoriously in the Stockwell thing, they push us back, right? The question is not whether they... That's why you need an independent body. So when they push, we push in the other direction, right?
With equal force.
Well, does anybody think, right? Does anybody really think, right, that the officers in the G20 case would now be facing charges and the CPS considering action against them if we didn't investigate it?
Well, does maybe, because think, The Guardian came out with those pictures. Remember the film? And it came from people who sent their video, mobile phone video, to The Guardian, and it looked as though it was because of that, as opposed to what you guys did, because there was all this talk of no CCTV in those positions, you know, covering those areas. And I thought to myself, it's because of The Guardian that this has got this far, not the IPCC.
It's always the case that things, you know, how do we find out about things? Because people tell us, right? It's not some magical process where this sort of material suddenly miraculously appears in our office. Mm. This material appears because people give it to us and people have got confidence to give us. And the people, for instance, who supply the material to Guardian have been really helpful to us and have cooperated with us. And you say, well, would they have been the same with the police? Look at, for instance, if you look at the statistics we published today, give you an example, right? One of the issues there, and one of the things that's gone up, not huge numbers, but percentage-wise gone up a lot, is allegations of sexual assault by police officers, right? So would people feel confident about going to... So I don't think there's been a sudden increase in that, right, in the actual incidents. What I think is happening is that people feel confident about saying that to an independent organisation in a way they wouldn't feel confident about saying that to the police themselves. So look, do I think we always get it right? Do I think we're perfect? Of course not, right? And we don't pretend that to be, right? The critical thing, right, is that I think we do a good, competent job. And the critical thing is we're not the police. We're not part of the police family. We don't have those kind of relationships. And make our minds up on the facts.
Bringing it back to the figures that are out today, you say the vast majority of the complaints are not on the big things. They're on rudeness, people complaining about timekeeping and such. How many of those people that complain about those things are people that have... been victims of crime, then how many of those people are people who've maybe possibly been arrested and then it's gone nowhere and so they've got an axe to grind?
No, you have to be really clear about this, right? We've done a lot. I mean, we don't have, because we can't have the exact figures on that, but we've done a lot of research into this. And one of the things the police need to understand is that the people who are most likely to complain are the people with the most positive attitudes towards the police, right? Because those are the people who feel most let down when they don't get the service they want. And they believe something will happen if they do complain, right? If you're, a young black man on the streets of Brixton and you're having constant run-ins with the police, of course you're not going to complain because you don't believe that you will be taken seriously or anything serious will happen. That's a problem we need to address.
And that is a fact, isn't it? Black people are more unlikely to complain than anybody else.
Well, the gap is closing. The gap is closing. What's a really positive thing, right? When we inherited the system, as Henry was saying, we took over a discredited system and there was a big gap between black people's confidence in the system and the population as a whole, right? What we've done is we've closed the gap. We've still got a long way to go, but that gap has really closed, I think. And that's one of the things I'm most pleased about, because it's really important, that what I think sometimes the police will do is they'll dismiss complaints. They'll say, well, look, they say a bit like...
they try and make it informal,
sometimes informal is what people want, actually. Just come back to that, right? Okay. It's kind of, they would say that, wouldn't they? And these are all troublemakers. No, they're not. When I say chief police officer, you need to listen to this. On the whole, this is your friends telling you you're rude and late, right? You need to get a grip on that, right? You need to go. And of course, some forces are good at that. They do get a grip and the complaints go down. Confidence in that force rises. In some forces, they're very dismissive of it and then actually just leaves people more fed up than when they started. And just go back to your point, Emery, about what people want. What people tell us they want for their low-level stuff, they don't want, let's say you've been a victim of a crime and the police say they're going to come and going to check it out, and they don't turn up, right? And you ring up to complain, right? In that situation, the right answer is not, okay, I'm going to investigate whether any officers committed misconduct, and I'll come back and tell you in 6 months whether they have. The right answer is, I'm really sorry about that. We'll sort that out and send somebody around straight away, right? That's the correct. So people don't necessarily, what people say to us they want, their priority for the lower level things, not the big things, just to be clear, their priority on the whole is they want the problem fixed, they want the fact that something's gone wrong acknowledged, and they want an apology. What they don't want is a big, long bureaucratic process.
Nick, to what degree do you think the image of the police was damaged by the G20 thing amongst the people who would normally support them? And I say this because, on personal experience, as somebody who by and large thought the police were a force for good, suddenly I was watching those things on the the G20, the covering up of badges, the and the stuff that was going on there, and it's completely, I have to say, shaken my faith in it. I believe I suddenly saw what I thought was kind of institutionalized, I don't know how to, sort of malfeasance, I suppose.
It clearly was damaging, right? And I think that there have been other incidents like that. There have been, on the whole, I'm not here to apologise or explain for the police. You know, some of that you have to answer yourself, so, try not to get that. Look, but one thing in Britain, one of quite good things around, I think on the whole, a good thing about the way that in Britain demonstrations get policed, as opposed to on the continent, is it's very up close and personal, right? We'll have direct contact. On the continent, the police will stand a long way back, the crowds are behind barricades, and if people are starting to get a bit difficult, then they bring the water cannons out. It's not the way we do it here. It's much more upfront and personal, right? What that needs is good control and management. I think that a lot of this stuff we're talking about, whether you're talking about G20, right, or whether you're talking about the rude and late stuff, or whether you're talking about racist behaviour, whatever you might be talking about, often the question I ask about these things is, where were the supervisors when this was going on, right? What you've often got is some quite young cops in quite difficult and confrontational and emotional situations. What they really need on the spot is really good management. You know, and I said at the time, look, if someone's not wearing their numerals and there's been an order everyone should wear their numerals, well, what were the sergeants and inspectors doing?
Well, they clearly were in on it, weren't they? Yeah.
Well, it's just, they don't challenge, they don't supervise, they don't assert themselves. And in those situations, in a difficult situation, there's stuff still to come out about G20. No one is saying there weren't some real pressures, right? When people are, it's human beings dealing with a difficult situation. What they need in those situations is good, close. But when you have people stepping out of line, we're not making judgments about the police service. What we would do is say, if those individuals abuse the powers that they had, then they're just the same as anybody else. They need to be brought before the courts and dealt with.
But why is it that so often when the police go to the courts, absolutely nothing happens? I mean, you get the impression that the vast majority of cases they get off.
Well, that's not, some of that is I don't think is true. I mean, we've had lots of cases we can point to. One in the paper yesterday, it didn't get much coverage. It was a officer who killed a woman showing off in his car. Bumped into her in his car.
That's right. I heard about that case.
We independently investigated that. The guy, I think, is pretty guilty. He'll probably get a custodial sentence. Doesn't make big news, but those sorts of things happen a lot, right? What I think, but let's just be clear about us, our role, I think there's a confusion. What we are is the investigators. We're not the prosecutors. We don't decide whether someone should face criminal charges, and we're certainly not the judge and the jury, right? And nor should we be, right? Nor should we be. It wouldn't be just as people are upset when the police think they are judge and jury, that those roles should be separated. So with us, you need to separate out the investigation process from deciding whether somebody's guilty or not and deciding what penalty they should have. And sometimes, of course, that can be frustrating. It can be frustrating for us. But I think that is a proper distinction.
We've got Nick Hardwick here. He is the chairman of the IPCC since 2002. Is that right, Nick?
2003.
2003, that's when you came into being, okay. You used to look young, man. It's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure, isn't it?
Really, I'm only 22. Actually,
we don't believe you.
Well, I think it's a... it deals with controversial stuff,
On the front line. Okay, well, your thoughts about the police, please, you can text us. The number is 80818. That's 80818. Start your text with the word colourful, leave a space, and then your message. It can be positive things as well as the negative things. What about the IPCC? Are they really the independent force, independent of the police, that Nick claims they are? Or do you feel that sometimes they're behind the story during that golden hour when the police say, actually, we're the professionals, sit back, and we'll tell you when we can bring you in?
Let's talk about that bit. I mean, look, one of the things is, look,
because that was very damaging to you guys. Damaging.
Well, I think, what in the end, right, on those sorts of things, what matters when it goes to trial. Let's just be clear. Like, we are not, right? I don't think people want us to be a big, huge bureaucracy, right? If we are going to, in a big incident, right, where the critical thing, right, is you have to get hold of whatever footage and evidence is there, you have to get hold of the witnesses, you have to preserve it, right? Unless we have hundreds more people, we cannot deploy, right, a huge team anywhere in the country within hours, right? So you might say, okay, government, you know, if that's what people want, give us loads more money and we can do those kinds of things. But so the decision you've got to make is you've got to control. And at the immediate point, we're not doing an emergency service. What you have to control is what the police are doing, because the evidence and the continuity of the evidence, right, is really important. This is stuff, it's not just, you know, we're not just dealing with kind of opinion here, right? What we have to do is produce evidence that will stand up in court when that is subject to very aggressive scrutiny. So we've, you know, some people have sent us, you know, people might send us in other cases, they'll send us some YouTube footage. Well, we then have to prove what the defence will say. It's been doctored. How are you going to prove? What's the continuity of that? How are you going to prove it's what you said it? So unless you can prove that what you've got is valid, it just won't stand up
in court. And when some YouTube footage of Ian Tomlinson, you know, because, I mean, about three or four different angles came in, didn't they, you know, and people get very, very excited when they realise this, the information is going to be taken very, very seriously. It's going to get on television. Yeah. Nick Hardwick's going to have to look at it. How do you then investigate that footage? How do you then know that it's true, that it's clear?
I mean, look, it's a live case. I don't want to prejudice the case, otherwise I'll get in trouble. But look, what you've got to do, it's a kind of really painstaking process with these things, where you're trying to put together detailed movements over people over a period of time. You're trying to, and we're trying to be fair. We're saying, okay, what are the officers? You can get a little clip of footage, right? And that looks really bad. And then you look at what was happening 30 seconds before, and that puts everything in a completely different context, right? So let's just be clear. You know, what we're going to try and be fair. We don't come at this, right, with a, and sometimes people find this difficult. Our first question is, what's happened here? We don't start making assumptions, right? Because in reality, the police will be involved in confrontations. That doesn't mean that's always around. So we say, what's happened here? What are the reasons for it? And then we'll make decisions about how to treat it. So we try and come to things not making assumptions, not, you know, they have this thing, you know, assume nothing, believe no one, check everything. Yeah. That's what we tell people to do, ABC.
Mm-hmm. And how, I suppose, embarrassed were you during that particular period when initially you said, well, there were no cameras covering the spot where Ian Tomlinson was allegedly assaulted, you know, near the Bank of England. And then, of course, there were several cameras there. Were you a bit too hasty at that point? Did you consider your position?
I would say, Henry, assume nothing, believe no one, check everything. And that evidence will be stuff that will come out at the time, at the trial. I'm not embarrassed by what I said at all. All
Nick, right. Blair Peach was a name that was back in the news a little while ago. Are the IPC anything to do with that investigation?
No, it's not. That predates us. But I think that does illustrate the difference, right? Blair Peach, very serious incident, was investigated by the police themselves. Even now, the files and papers on that aren't published. What was that, 30 years ago now?
Yeah, 30 years ago.
That wouldn't happen now. That wouldn't happen with us, right? I'm not saying you would necessarily get the result. You know, that depends on the circumstances. Everything would be published. People would be able to see it. It'd be investigated by us, not by the police.
Is there a time limit that people have before, you know, bringing up a complaint to you about an incident?
They have to do it a year after the... unless there's
within
some
a year.
Reason, unless there's some reason. I mean, sometimes people can't do it within that time. So there can be exceptional circumstances. But you've got to be fair. You know, you can't have people dragging stuff up, you know, for years afterwards. But we'll look at each thing on its merits. Right? And as I say, I think on the whole, it's important not to get seduced by the most serious cases. Actually, most things that really affect people's day-to-day lives are relatively small, and what they want is they want someone local to fix it, to learn from it and apologise and sort it out. And that's what we're trying to encourage the police to do. You don't want some to wait for ages to ask to get involved. You want the guys on the ground to sort it.
I agree with that, but it just seems to me that these big cases are really what influence public opinion. And for instance, the Jean-Charles de Menezes case, I don't think most people, I certainly believe that justice has been done. when the coroner, I know this is beyond you, but when the coroner said that they could only that they couldn't bring in the unlawful killing verdict or whatever it was, I can't remember which one it was, that he said he couldn't. You know, basically, I think most people have taken out of this that justice has not been done. I'm going to guess, if we come out of the Ian Tomlinson story and nobody is held to account for this, I think most people are going to go, this is another establishment cover-up. Right. And I'm not talking about people, and I'm talking about people who normally are on the side of the establishment.
I think that the... look, as I said before, that some of those aren't decisions that kind of we make, right? And that's a proper kind of distinction. That in the end, right, that distinction between the investigator and the sort of judicial authority protects people, right? And there's a, you know, I'd say people, there's a real risk. You might say, in this thing I'm really angry about, I don't want that principle upheld, right? Well, people may live to regret that, because once you start to breach that principle and you say, all right, the people doing the investigation should make the decisions about whether people are guilty or not, then that wouldn't just stick with us. That would see, is that what you want the police themselves doing, making those decisions? People don't like it when that happens and they feel they're doing that. So you have to be some clear principles about justice. And that does sometimes mean that people feel people have got away with things, right? And that's kind of very frustrating, and I understand that. But I think let's take another topic, which I think is really important to people. People's concerns about kind of deaths in custody, right?
Yeah.
You know, what's happening there, right? One of the things that we've done, and I think we can claim, it's not just down to us, obviously, police themselves have done, you know, the numbers of deaths in custody has fallen from, it's really significantly since we started off. There were 15 deaths in custody last year, which is the lowest level ever, right?
And are they usually people in police cells? Sometimes it's normally drink involved
now,
as well.
Yeah, normally now, normally the causes of a death in custody will be, the issue is around someone who was mentally or physically vulnerable in some way or other, you know, ill health. It's not about people getting attacked, right? Normally it's about mental or physical unhealth. And the question is whether they got the care and support they should have done. So it's a big issue for us, right? Big issue for us. Is that people who are mentally ill, right, having a serious episode, and under the law as it stands at the moment, they can be taken, Section 136 of the Mental Health Act, taken to a place of safety, right? Places of safety include police custody, right? And what we say is police custody isn't a place of safety. It may be as an emergency kind of, that's where the people have to go start with. But police cells are used as a place of safety with people with mental illness far too frequently. And that often leads to people dying. So we work really hard to change that, and we have significantly reduced the number. So now, someone's having some sort of paranoid episode, they're much more likely to be taken to hospital, which is where they should be, than taken to a police cell, which is the wrong place for them. That will save people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, there's something else. I mean, so often people approach me in the street, or I hear of cases where a young man, often a young black man, is being arrested, sometimes violently, in the street by police. People gather around, or one or two take out their mobile phones and start recording the situation. The police tell them to back off, you're interfering with an investigation or with an arrest. And sometimes they actually end up arresting the person who is trying to be the good citizen. The question is, what are their rights in that situation? Because one of my friends did go through hell as a result of trying to be a good citizen.
I think that really irritates me. Let's just be quite clear. You can take pictures. Obviously, you can't interfere with, you shouldn't interfere in the thing. But, I mean, you can take pictures. You are perfectly entitled to take pictures, right? And there is no law that allows the police to say you can't do that.
They do say that all the time.
I understand that. I understand that, right? And we will uphold complaints on that basis. People complain to us. We will uphold those, right? It's not. And we had a case where it happened just the other day. There was a... There was an arrest going on. It was in the Mall in central London. There was an arrest going on of police and a couple of youths. And someone on the other side of the road wasn't actually taking a picture. What they were doing is they were late for an appointment. And so they had their phone out, kind of fiddling with it to send a text, right? Mm-hmm. And the police came over and said, look, we want to check that you haven't been taking pictures. And she said, I haven't been taking pictures. What's it got to do with you, right? And they said, well, we want to see your, we're arresting you under the Section 44 anti-terrorist stop. We want your phone, right? It's outrageous, outrageous, right? And you have to be, and to be fair, I think that they, you know, both AMFs and the police command, what's it like, that just can't be.
So what happened? What will happen in that case?
Well, if that complaint was upheld, I don't know what happened to that particular complaint. If that complaint was upheld, then the officer might well be disciplined for that.
Meaning what?
Well, the way that works at the moment is the same would happen for anybody in any organisation. They've changed the police system to make it more like the civilian discipline system. Mm. So you can be, for gross misconduct, you can be sacked. In other cases, you get a series of warnings that escalate, and if the behaviour repeats, you will you can be eventually dismissed. And often what they will do is there'll be a question and there'll also be something to try and improve the behaviour in future and training, whatever it might be.
Retraining, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the kind of right thing. You know, no one... it's better. What we said is the police discipline system should be less like a sort of army court-martial system. Should be more like the civilian discipline that everybody understands what the deal is. And on the whole, it should be about improving performance.
But I don't understand this, because to me that's such a simple thing to get over. Why isn't it going out as mandatory at every level, and every one email goes out and says this must never happen again?
Well, look, one of the things that's really clear, right? You were asking me at the start of this interview about whether we are independent of the police, right? And we are, right? And one of the things that's really clear, I don't manage the police service, right? And don't try to manage it. So we would say, look, this is happening, whatever, and that's the problem. We'll say over to you. It's very tempting to say, look, this is so frustrating, I want to get in there and fix it. But once you start to get in there and you start to get involved in fixing it, once you start to have your hands on a kind of management list, then you're part of the machine. And you're like, so we say, look, in the end, it has to be over you. But look, if you keep making the same mistake, we will keep hammering you. And hopefully programs like this will keep reporting it.
Yeah.
And eventually the embarrassment factor will fix it. Rather than wait till you're shamed into action, why not get a grip on it earlier, right? Mm. So it's not, look, don't think... And look, just to be clear about this, I mean, I also think... I think people have more subtle and complicated views about the police than they're given credit for. I think people understand the police have a difficult job to do, and that's why... I mean, my experience is they're not actually often very punitive, right? It's why they want stuff to... So they're not saying... They get really fed up when they think the police are abusing their powers, or when they're being kind of lazy and neglectful. But a mistake, when someone's made a kind of bad call and they've made an honest mistake, then they want it sorted. They want someone told not to do it again. But they're not as punitive as sometimes I think they are supposed to be. Right? Mm. And I think people do understand. I think, my experience is people have a more complicated view of the police than sometimes the kind of newspapers will suggest.
Well, Nick, thank you very much indeed for coming in to talk to us. For you've got other interviews to do, but I'm very, very pleased. It's your debut on Colourful Radio. I think we've been trying to get you on here for a while.
It's a pleasure to come. Pleasure to come. So,
excellent. Nick Hardwick, chairman of the IPCC since 2003.
This is Colourful Radio.